Hey, what's up, man? We made it
Hey,
to another
man.
week.
Ah, happy Friday.
And since we've done this for a year, guess what we get to do?
Bum, 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 bum.
We get to do a year in review.
Whoop. Hang on. Yeah, you know what? I remember when we first set out on this little venture, and kind of like my experience in gardening, it was kind of like, let's just see if we can get to our first milestone, which was, and I remember you saying, it's a low bar, Toby. It's only one a week. And there were weeks where it was kind of a struggle, you know,
yeah,
where it'd be like a 11th hour call. Let's jump on and make a recording. So,
yep.
Yeah, I'd love to hear on reflection. What are some of the episodes or topics that stand out to you?
Yeah, let's go back. If we go back to one of our first ones, which was process has to be discoverable and transferable.
I love that. That was episode 2. That
yeah.
was an early on, but
it was early
tenet that we talked about.
Yeah. And I think most of the time, process is driven from above, right? So a manager, an executive says, we're going to go do a thing, which basically does the telephone game down to the boots in the ground. And at the end, you end up with a telephone game, which is like, we don't know what we're doing and we don't know what was said originally, but we're doing a thing because nothing is more permanent than a temporary solution.
Nothing is more permanent except for a one-time modeling exercise in Excel that becomes an integral part of every month's reporting. We cover that somewhere out there, but yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Process is not typically this intelligent design. It's usually like ad hoc bubblegum and duct tape until we realize it's bubblegum and duct tape. So
correct.
And transferable and discoverable, though. Talk about those key elements, though, that we touched.
I think if you have a process that's discoverable, meaning I can find it and I know how to do the thing, whatever the thing is, even if the thing is running a meeting, it has to be, you have to be able to go find it somewhere. Right. And then the other key is like, okay, is it transferable? Meaning like if you and I went to NASA and we picked up a document on, you know, nuclear something or other, or transfusion or fuel usage, it would not be transferable, but that's a bit of a funny story, but that's kind of how we do our process, right? Where one person builds it, they think everybody thinks the way that they do. And so the process is elegant, but it's for them, but it's not transferable to anyone.
Boy, it's so, so true, right? Even if you can find it, can you do anything with it?
Yeah.
And ultimately that therein lies the conundrum as we build process and as we bring people in to use the processes we've designed.
Yep.
Can they make good use of it?
Yeah,
and,
totally.
And can they take over ownership when we're ready to move on to the next thing? Which I think, as I recall, that was probably a key element we talked about because you and I are a bit of restless souls.
Yep.
We're happy to build it, but it doesn't mean that we want to be there forever, you know, doing the feeding and maintenance. And some folks, that's where they thrive.
Yep. I think the other thing we talked about is like, in order for something to be discoverable and transferable, it's one thing if it's a one-off, but if you're going to be doing the same thing in 3 years or 6 months, you approach it a little bit differently. You approach it with an iterative model, not with the, here's my PowerPoint, it's complete, do the meeting and we're done.
Right.
But the silly thing is most businesses run most of their processes like it's a PowerPoint, it's delivered, mic drop, and we're out. And all the people are left picking up the pieces and they don't know how or what the next steps are.
Yeah. Chris, the piece that I'll touch on that comes to mind, and I don't know that we necessarily covered it at the time, but it is a very specific gift to be able to turn an idea into a repeatable process. And I think that too oftentimes, you know, there's certain functions that do get romanticized or, oh my gosh, wouldn't it be nice to only be worrying about new things and not taking care of the business that we've built?
Yeah.
And so the piece maybe that I'll offer, just my final thought around transferable and discoverable, is that recognizing those people that develop process that is easily discoverable, that feels intuitive.
Yep.
Those people are the crown jewels. That's how you scale any organization.
Yep.
Because they have to make everybody feel part of the community instead of always on the outside. So episode two was transferable and discoverable.
Yep. And I would say that those, like, those people are your biggest levers.
Gosh.
Because if you can, and the reality is that if you can leverage four deep, then you that's where scale comes from.
100%.
So, all right. Next favorite topic from last year. I don't remember exactly what episode. I think you have this, but was when we talked about Elon entering the government and the process that he would run into, which is not his corporation.
It's funny because Elon's been a recurring topic, probably in a lot of conversations over the last year. But yeah, this was early December, episode 9 last year, when all of a sudden we were talking about what the heck is going on.
You know?
What is it that, as you think back to that, we were kind of talking about at this point, he had his Doge organization that he's going to eliminate all the dumb processes.
Yep.
So what is it that's sticking in your brain from that first one? We first started talking about what does this look like?
I mean, I'd have to go back and listen, but I would say that we predicted the challenge accurately and wrongly at the same time. Right. Meaning we predicted the difficulty that he would run into.
Yeah.
I don't think we necessarily predicted how it would end up, where it really became, you've got two alphas, two billionaires in a squabble. Like we didn't necessarily predict that.
Right.
And it's very interesting because, Elon had to play by some set of rules that he didn't like, and did what CEOs do oftentimes, which is bending their reality with their distortion field or whatever. I think you say that well. You say it better than I do, but I think, he leaned into the marketing, which, I think if you were to go back and do an analysis of it, it was mostly marketing.
It totally was. I mean, the master of the hype cycle, and the first time I'd heard that phrase, the reality distortion field, was credited to Steve Jobs, because he could walk into a room and basically make people believe in something that they'd never seen, tasted, touched, or experienced, and it catapulted us forward. And I think Elon evidences that same kind of wild gift in a way that grows things. It is funny, though, to watch two alphas, probably who both thought the other one was working for them, right? And they were both kind of confounded, and a little bit of ketamine in the mix doesn't necessarily make very predictable outcomes. But you're right. We had, at that point in time, people that we'd never heard of were given access to the most proprietary data, which, in the subsequent year, it's been unclear where some of that landed. But it does raise this question of what does that mean? And what a year on, what unintended consequences are going to happen? I'm sure that the team that went in was very good at transferring data and digging in and discovering what was available. And we know the data today is the same as crown jewels. It's
about for sure.
So much of our world revolves around trading data, but I found it really fascinating that it was a little bit of the Dunning-Kruger effect that I know we've touched on several times, where a little bit and you feel brilliant.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you learn a little bit more and only then begin to realize how novice you are on the topic. And I think that first collision of very smart, savvy, data-minded people, they just ran roughshod over what has been long-standing process that's been built over decades in our young country. And so that was what a swirl, in retrospect.
Oh, yeah. Well, what's interesting is they were even publishing on their site on all the things that all the projects that they could figure out, and they were doing it, it was all veiled, right? And the New York Times found within their HTML, they included the actual, like, the requisition or number so that they could actually go back and fact check them. Well, then they discovered it, and then it disappeared. And so, like, what's interesting is they did a bit of a shell game, because people want to believe that governments are inefficient. And the reality is roads cost something. I mean, the system of giving us infrastructure that no private company is ever going to want to pay for is expensive.
Yeah. Where's my ROI on clean water?
Yeah.
It's a weird world when, and I'm willing to bet we touched on it back in the day, but as I sit here now, you know, kind of rehashing our best recollection of it, it's a strange thing when those things that we might otherwise think of as inalienable rights in a first world country, just basic access to food, water, shelter, and purpose, right? The ability to get up in the morning and make a contribution of some sort, that people feel increasingly separated at times, or like those things are no longer accessible. Yeah. And so I remember at the moment it was both. I'm not a big fanboy, but I also, you know, much like I'll say Mitch McConnell is wildly effective regardless of your political leanings, yeah, Elon has also proven to be a wildly effective individual in terms of marshaling large teams and doing, you know, previously unimaginable things. And so in the moment, I was concerned and also a little bit fascinated. And now a year on, it's fallen out of the news cycles behind the million and one other things, including the frog marching arm in arm with, you know, inflatable unicorns here in the war zone of Portland. So
That's right. You're close to the war zone. Be safe, my friend.
Right.
All right. Yeah. Let's shift topics to one of the ones that we did later, which is why, you know, in business, oftentimes there is this idea of, make versus buy. We spent some time talking about try versus buy.
Yeah, this was episode 43. So it was late spring, early summer.
Yep.
Sticks with you about this because I really like the language of try versus buy instead of make.
Yeah.
Make so much certainty to it, as I recall, that I like this idea of try versus buy.
I think if you found those magical people that understood process,
yeah,
and you could just send them loose and give them a charter and fixing things with the boots in the ground, I think you would almost always win with try.
Yeah.
As long as you had an executive sponsor, because I can't think of any tool out there that is not bad mouthed when some human goes and mucks it up.
Including a shovel.
Oh,
I mean, that's my favorite example, like perhaps one of the simplest tools, but if you've ever tried to spade a garden with a dull shovel,
oof,
and then been given a sharpened shovel, it feels like your muscles have redubled, you know, and the same, I guess, would be true of trying to chop firewood with a dull axe versus, you know, having a sharpened axe for the task.
Yeah.
And to your point about try, it's a little bit of learning and also not assuming that you know everything right out of the gates. There's a discovery and it's uncomfortable and it makes us feel stupid and incompetent. And that usually means we're learning something.
Yep.
So try versus buy. Buy is fast, right? Especially if we have the right experts at the table.
What's interesting about buying is it can be a fool's errand. And what I mean by that is the difficulty is getting the budget allocated. And then once the budget is allocated, basically people just expect it to match the marketing that is on whatever website of the SaaS system that you just went and bought.
Yeah.
And so the executives kind of have their ability to let go once the budget is allocated versus the people that are left to implement. And oftentimes by that time, you know, the executive or the sponsor has changed their focus to the next fire. And so, you know, when I've been successful at just implementing new process and new SaaS tools, you just have a very, very strong executive sponsor, and you have, and I've been able to work with the boots in the ground. And, you know, some of my proudest moments are when I've created something with people that are actually going to be using it on a day in and day out basis. And they're providing really great feedback in what should be done. And sometimes it's, you know, I oftentimes go back to, you know, the Six Sigma, which is, you know, really an operational item, and not necessarily a process thing, but I think, you know, I think one Sigma is 66%, two Sigma's, I think 85, and then you get to 90, or then you get to 95 and 97. But the difficulty of getting moving up that rate in the Sigmas is exponentially difficult. And most of the time people want that 99.9% accuracy out of their process, whereas it would be three times as easy if you just dropped 3 percentage points and just went to 97 point whatever.
Yeah. I mean, that's, Chris, it's really, it's an interesting point you make. And if it's, you know, Six Sigma allows for 3 defects per million.
Yep.
And can you imagine if all of our business processes were operating like that? Not that every transaction goes through smoothly.
Yeah.
But that we're finding the defects early enough on that they don't get to the end of it and they're errors.
Yeah. Yeah.
Only 3 errors per million. Like, payroll teams would love that. But I love your point, though, that, you know, as we think about try versus buy, and to your example about working directly with people that have to take ownership of the process once it's completed, the more we involve them in it, the earlier that ownership begins, and the less wasted energy, just as we have to give those operational teams that little bit of breathing room to be present to the conversations and to bring their expertise into the dialogue, so that as we build process, as we harden process, it reflects the wisdom that's already there.
Yeah.
I think you make an excellent point about executives cut checks, but everybody else lives with the consequences. And so, as I talked about a lot through the last year, you know, you and I were comparing and contrasting the process ownership and leadership that you've played such a vital role in the last, you know, many years of your career, whereas I've been consulting and coming in from the outside. And the most staggering thing to me as a young professional doing project work and trying to affect change in how businesses operate was that it had nothing to do with the technical excellence of the process. It had everything to do about stakeholder engagement and making sure that people had clear ownership, which kind of links back to the transferable and discoverable, right?
Totally.
Yeah. Try versus buy. I think try is so empowering too, in that it helps us flex new muscles or new ways of thinking.
Yeah.
You know, we can't ride the bike for our kids. At some point, we have to teach them how to do it and then know that they're going to tip over and they're going to be wobbly and
then
get scraped up a little bit.
Perfect, man. Well, that's a year in review.
What a good year, Chris. I'm excited for year two. I don't quite know what it's going to entail. I do know that, and just want to acknowledge you've had a recent shift.
Oh, yeah.
I'm very excited about our ability to do more intensive collaboration.
Yeah.
In the Magic Button Labs world and bring a lot of these practices, you know, directly to bear.
Yeah.
And so I've loved all of your contributions in that advisory role, and now just super excited to see you stepping up and taking over some leadership roles to help drive that organization forward. Do amazing things for clients.
At the very least, I'll be able to say, hey, I tried an experiment and it didn't work.
That's right.
I will predict. I will be like, hey, I tried to get people to change and this was really hard. I think that's going to be the outcome.
I think so. Well, and I think, you know, in the year ahead too, I look forward to having some, doing some engagements together and you know, potentially talking with more people in this space, whether they're professionals that we know that are doing this or thought leaders around you know, how people are coming at process debt differently, but also potentially clients that, you know, we've been able to help would be an exciting addition to some of these things.
Yeah, I hope my very small goal is that we continue to do this weekly, but we have at least four interviews. I think that's doable.
That seems very doable. I'm full of optimism. It's the season. Yep. Leaves are changing and pumpkin spice lattes are flowing in everybody's blood. So
that's right.
Four guests in this next year. Let's do it.
All right. Sounds good, man. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, sir. See ya. Bye.